Chaplin, headline, byline. ABC, the first name in news, presents the established Pacific Coast newscaster and analyst, Tony Morse, with a headline summary of last-minute worldwide bulletins, plus his dramatic analysis of the news stories of the hour. First, the dateline.
San Francisco, December 10th, 1946.
The headline.
Mrs. Shaw and the suggestion of the year.
And the byline.
By Tony Morse.
In exactly 30 seconds, Tony Morse with his dateline summary of last-minute bulletins. But first, veterans, do you know how to make a GI loan? There's an expert on GI loans at the Community Chest, sponsored Veterans Information Center in City Hall. Whether you plan on making a GI loan now or later, this expert will gladly explain in detail how you can make such loans. He's available at the Information Center in City Hall throughout the week and until noon on Saturdays. And now, Tony Morse with Dateline, Headline, Byline.
Washington, both the OPA and the White House have denied any knowledge of reports in California that rental ceilings will be increased 15% in the next 48 hours. Apartment Owners Association in both San Francisco and Los Angeles claim that such an increase is forthcoming. Pittsburgh, the Solid Fuels Administration is hopeful today's coal production will reach 95% of the normal 2,200,000 ton a day output. All but 10,000 miners in scattered areas are reported back on the job. Oakland, business agents and executive boards of all AF-AL unions in Alameda County have been called to a special meeting in Oakland tomorrow. Union officials have expressed strong dissatisfaction with the negotiations to end the strike at Conn's and Hastings department stores. Washington, President Truman is reported working on a survey preliminary to recommending labor legislation to the next Congress. Sources close to the president say he wants a clear-cut law to outline labor's responsibility to the people and the government. Sacramento, complaints have been filed against 130 additional San Francisco tavern owners who allegedly have failed to comply with the ruling that they must serve food to continue in business. Equalization Board member George Riley says he will recommend that their licenses be suspended until they conform with the law. Milwaukee. The mayor of suburban West Allis, Wisconsin, has asked the governor to send a National Guard detachment to prevent further violence in the Allis-Chalmers strike. Mayor Klentz telegraphed the governor that he has conferred with local police and decided that additional protection is needed in the face of growing violence. Washington. The Agriculture Department dampened the hopes of housewives who had been looking forward to a sugar ration increase during the January-March quarter. OPA had announced that a 5-pound bonus might be coming for both commercial and consumer levels, but the Agriculture Department says no increase before April. Phoenix. Arizona Mine Inspector Clifford Murdoch is hastening to Globe to personally inspect attempts to rescue a miner who has been trapped in a caved-in shaft for 3 days. Murdoch says new equipment is being used to try to free the man from above the blocked mine tunnel. New York. The Big Four foreign ministers have agreed, in substance, on most of the remaining points covering the creation of a free port of Trieste. The Big Four appointed an international commission to check on the port's operations and agreed to ban exclusive economic unions between Trieste and any other country. Stockholm. Sweden's aged monarch, 88-year-old King Gustav, presented Nobel Prizes to 5 Americans and 1 German today in a formal ceremony. Prizes went to Dr. Percy Williams, Harvard University physicist, Dr. James Sumner of Cornell, Dr. John Northrop and Wendell Stanley of Rockefeller Institute, and Dr. Herman Muller of Indiana University. Tehran. 4 columns of Iranian government troops marched into the semi-autonomous province of Azerbaijan today and reportedly captured the city of Myana in record time. The city is on the main highway and rail route to the Azerbaijan capital of Tabriz. Jerusalem. The Palestine government says a Greek destroyer has evacuated the most seriously injured of 730 Jews shipwrecked on the island of Sirena. British naval vessels have been instructed to stand by to remove hospital cases directly to Palestine. Some 240 of the victims are reported in serious condition from exposure.
In just 30 seconds, Tony Morse with his dramatic interpretation of the news stories of the hour. But first, listen to a brief message from your Navy department. The United States Navy has now resumed unlimited recruiting. Yes, young men, 17 through 30, you may now enlist in the United States Navy with no waiting. Service in this new peacetime Navy offers higher pay and allowances than ever before. Specialized training in over 80 different trades will give you the skill and experience so necessary when you return to civilian life. See your Navy recruiting officer today for full details. Now, ABC's veteran Pacific Coast analyst, Tony Morse, with his dramatic portrait of the headline news of the hour.
Up until today, I had some pretty definite ideas about women in politics. But since 2 o'clock this afternoon, I must confess that my prior convictions about women's places in the home have undergone a drastic change. A San Francisco housewife saw to that, and, I might add, a very intelligent San Francisco housewife. The lady in question happens to be a certain Mrs. G.W. Shaw. She's the wife of a local advertising man, so International News Service informs us, and I think she's come up with one of the Blue Ribbon Prize Suggestions of the Year. As you're well aware, there seems to be quite a to-do about just where the United Nations should locate their permanent headquarters. Foreigners in the East are convinced that no better site can be found than their own New York. New Englanders are cut to the quick that the UN Committee has rejected their cultural center of Boston. Philadelphians insist that their city would provide the best haven for the gentlemen of the United Nations. But San Franciscans, perhaps rightly so, are supremely confident that this city by the Golden Gate is without question the finest world capital to be had. And so the battle rages, with the home site question growing increasingly cloudy and providing another bone for the Big Three and the UN General Assembly to haggle over. Now, since Mrs. Shaw is one of the local citizenry, you might well expect her to come barging forward with a grandiloquent plea to substantiate San Francisco's claim to the world capital site. But no. In a manner proclaiming her a real citizen of the world, Mrs. Shaw professes her deep concern about current Russo-American relations. And because of her awareness to the pressing problem, she's come forward with what I judge to be a truly unique solution to the problem of just where should the UN build a home. Mrs. Shaw offered that solution to her government today in a letter to Secretary of State James Burns, and the solution is simply this. Establish the United Nations headquarters in Russia. That's right. Mrs. Shaw says establish the United Nations home in Russia. And in case you're of a mind to fly off the handle and denounce the suggestion before you study it, Mrs. Shaw adds hurriedly, what better way is there to penetrate Russia's Iron Curtain? And for an erstwhile news analyst, I can only say I'm kicking myself, because I didn't think of the same suggestion sooner. Actually, I think it adds up pretty well. The ungentlemanly bickering between American cities for the UN home site seems to have decided nothing. Europe has been ruled out already, and so has Asia, but the UN site committee has executed so many fancy turnabouts that it shouldn't be too difficult for them to execute one more and include Asia in again. Concurring with Mrs. Shaw's letter to Secretary Burns, I believe that the establishment of UN headquarters in Russia certainly might be the means of finally resolving the misunderstandings between Russia and the rest of the world. And as Mrs. Shaw writes, with diplomats, subsidiary workers, and the press of the world constantly on Russian soil, there should certainly be a host of opportunities for vastly improved relations. Moreover, moving the UN home to Russia would give world diplomats the chance to get a close look at Stalin's peoples, their economy, what they think, what they believe, and most importantly, what they think of us after a personal meeting. And as Mrs. Shaw adds, conversely, the untraveled Russians could come to know the peoples of the world. To that, may I add, a rousing bravo. It is my considered opinion, as well as that of Mrs. Shaw's, that the advantages gained by this proximity to the sore spot of international cooperation will far offset any geographical disadvantages Russia may present. In other words, we must admit that the number one problem is Russia. And we're not going to solve that puzzle staying across the sea and tossing rocks in that direction. On the other hand, if we get on top of the question, dissect the differences, get to the root of mistrusts and misunderstandings, it is extremely likely that the pressing answer to mutual cooperation in a world gone atomic will be more easily gained. In all, the suggestion that the United Nations lay permanent foundations in Russia strikes me as very worthy indeed. And so far as I can see, in connection with the proposal, there's only one great, all-important question to be answered. What do the Russians think about it?
Now, Tony Morse with the feature story of the day, Christmas Present.
Down along the central California coastline this morning, in the tiny Salinas Valley town of Greenfield, a chubby, tousled-haired, 2-year-old baby girl blinked open her eyes and with a dimpled baby fist tried to rub away the fading mists of blindness which had plagued her since birth. And her squeals of delight at the glittering sight of her first Christmas tree was evidence enough that little Mary Marlene Green was at last winning her fight against the darkness. The heartwarming story of the little girl and the gang of rough, tough railroad men who proved her greatest friends started a few weeks back in Stanford University Hospital in San Francisco. And from the very start, our ABC News staff here at Radio City has followed Mary Marlene's story with more than a professional interest. 90% of the time, stories like these are passed off simply and callously as tear-jerkers. And 90% of the time, they're reported, written up, and forgotten about. But not so with Mary Marlene. For the stirring simplicity of her great problem and the great warmness inherent to the men who helped give her back her sight is a story not easily forgotten. Actually, the tale starts with Mary Marlene's birth 2 years ago. And at that time, the little girl's mother found her newly born afflicted with congenital cataracts over both eyes. She was totally blind. And until a month ago, the little girl remained locked in her world of groping shadows. For it was a month ago that little Mary Marlene and her mother paid a visit to the house of Ernest Healy, a Southern Pacific Station agent in the vicinity of Greenfield. Mr. Healy had advertised in the paper that he had some collie puppies for sale, and Mrs. Green decided to buy one for her little blind daughter. When he saw Mary Marlene kneel down on the floor of his kennel and grope around uncertainly with her hands for the weak old pups, he choked down the lump in his chest and determined that with so much money in the world, there was no good reason why this little child shouldn't see. And that same night, he sent out the call to every Southern Pacific Railroad man around the Salinas countryside. Mary Marlene needed an operation on her eyes, and they, the railroad men, were going to pay for it. In a week, Healy collected $500. Then he took the money to Stanford Hospital in San Francisco and told the story of Mary Marlene to an eminent eye surgeon. The doctor told Healy not to worry. He'd see that Mary Marlene had her operation, money or no money. A week ago, the warm-hearted railroad men of the Salinas Valley got the word that Mary Marlene had been operated on. The doctors were hopeful, but they weren't entirely certain that the operation was completely successful. Then one morning last week, Mary Marlene awoke. The doctors removed the swathes of bandages from her eyes, and after a breathless moment, the little tousle-headed girl blinked again, gave a tiny squeal of joy. It was her first look at the world she lived in, and to the tiny child, it must have seemed a most wonderful place indeed. Well, this morning, the world became even more wonderful to chubby 2-year-old Mary Marlene. She knew only that light was a glittering, joyful thing, despite the shadows across the world she had no knowledge of. While across the great globe in the Near East, bloodshed enveloped Iran and threatened to envelop the three great powers of the world in another of their endless, dangerous bickerings. Great men in morning coats sit around the council tables in New York and ponder questions of moment, and the future of the human race as it toys with the almost almighty power of the atom. The shadows were there, dark and low-pressing and ominous, but to the little girl in the valley of Salinas, the world was a Christmas tree, hung bright with splotches of red and blue and drenched with silver tinsel, blazing with lights. A tree crested with a dazzling star and hanging just below, mankind's eternal symbol of hope, a cross. Through clearing eyes, little Mary Marlene perceived the light, and she found it exceeding good. And across the Salinas countryside, a gang of railroad men couldn't help but feel that they had done something very fine and good. All of which leads us to believe that perhaps the gentleman was quite correct when he wrote, "Indeed, there is a little bit of God in all of us."
Dateline, headline, byline. Listen tomorrow and every day at 4 o'clock, Monday through Friday, when ABC, the first name in news, presents the established observer and analyst, Tony Morse, with his headline summary of last-minute worldwide bulletins, plus his dramatic interpretation of the headlines of the hour. Dateline, headline, byline.